Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Friday, May 9th, 2025. It's an overcast and cool day here in Nashville, but we are getting a little relief from the constant rain we've had over the past few weeks. We are hoping that it will dry up enough to work in the garden this weekend. At our house, we have a pair of barred owls who are keeping our attention. They seem to be hunting night and day. And we also have a family of bluebirds tending to some newly hatched chicks in one of our bluebird boxes. As we get started today, let me send a shout out and thank you to Candy Rawlings and the staff at the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. They have revamped their website recently and have kindly included links to a collection of our podcasts, which are my interviews with TRPA Fellow Award winners. Thanks for that. It is much appreciated. And apropos to that, today's podcast is another in my series of interviews with TRPA Fellow Award recipients. This time with Mark Tummins, who received the Fellow Award in 2005. In the early 1950s, the Department of Conservation Division of Parks established the Office of the Recreation Consultant. At that time, the purpose was to develop appropriate recreation programming services within the state park system and also to be a liaison between state government and city and county park and recreation programs. At that time, the office was financially supported by a grant from the Tennessee Valley Authority. The first recreation consultant was Louis Twardzik. Lou was instrumental in the formation of the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. Lou went on to be a professor of Parks and Recreation at Michigan State University. That program was reestablished by statute in 1979 with the creation of the Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service. Several of the recreation consultants who have managed PARTAS have been guests on this podcast. Our guest today also served as a program administrator for PARTAS and as director of the Recreation Services Division. This is an important role managing federal grant money that comes to the state of Tennessee for local and state park and recreation. Mark also served as director of Parks and Recreation for the city of Clarksville and was for a time president of the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. Mark has now returned to Tennessee after several years as Parks and Recreation Director for the city of Leander, Texas. We talked to Mark today about his remarkable career and about the importance of parks and recreation services in local communities. And so, I hope you'll enjoy this conversation with Mark Tummins. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish 6 beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
So, Mark Tummins, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you having me.
I'm thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to have you here. You know, I saw you last, I guess it was November or October or November of last year at the TRPA meeting in Murfreesboro, and I had not seen you in a good long time, and it was great to see you, and I thought to myself then that I needed to dial you up and get you in here and talk. And so I'm glad you're here to join me today.
Absolutely.
So Mark, I want to spend a little bit of time with you today talking about your history and background. You know, there's kind of a legacy of people that I've interviewed on this program that have had similar jobs and experiences as you, starting with Jerry Dillehay, and Ann Marshall, and Gerald Parrish. Mm-hmm. I wish terribly that I'd had the opportunity to interview Joyce mm-hmm. Hoyle, but by the time I was doing this, Joyce had already passed away. But you follow in a line of individuals along that line that have served the state of Tennessee in the parks and recreation field as a leader. And so I wanted to get you in here and talk about that. Now, you've recently moved back to Tennessee.
I have, absolutely, just a few months ago, actually.
And you're living at, you say, New Johnsonville.
That's right.
Why did you choose there?
Well, we actually were looking more on the eastern side of Middle Tennessee.
Okay.
And we kept finding, we couldn't find what we really right. were looking for.
Okay.
And so we made this big loop. We didn't want to be in the Nashville. We wanted to be maybe an hour and a half outside of Nashville.
Gotcha.
And we kept moving southern part of Middle Tennessee, and then we went to the western part of Middle Tennessee and settled over there.
Well, that's a beautiful area.
It is.
You know, I first met you, I think, when you started at conservation back in the early 90s. Am
that's
I correct about that?
You are right.
I remember taking you out to lunch.
You did.
So you came to Tennessee to be the head of the Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service. Am I right about that?
I actually started in early 90s with Joyce and Ann.
Right.
And we they hired me, and I'm so thankful they did, somebody pretty green. And they hired me to be more of a technical advisory consultant mm-hmm. at the time.
Right.
And so one of those was traveling the state, obviously, as you know and recall, primarily the West Tennessee area.
Okay.
But I traveled the entire state. Sort of funny because we had just started the LPRF grant in 92, and Bob Richards had moved from state parks to recreation services right. at the time, and he was taking on the RTP, the Recreation Trail right. Program portion of the grants. And so Bob and I spent a lot of time together traveling the state as well. And we did a lot of work, GIS work. We'd go into cities and counties, especially the counties, went to the courthouses, and we'd literally pull tax maps and make copies. And we'd spend hours at these courthouses of the parks in the county. And so then we come back and have those digitized.
Okay.
And we were on the very front end of the GIS. Tennessee Tech had a contract with the state to do a lot of those. But then that contract ran out. It was not renewed. So they sent out, they did quite a bit of the eastern part of the state, some of the Middle Tennessee, but all of West, still a lot of Middle Tennessee was not done. And so Bob and I literally went out and did that work. We pulled tax documents, tax records, deeds, and then came back and had those digitized so we could do a GIS scope of the entire state of all the parks.
City parks, state parks.
That's correct. Okay. National parks.
Right.
Absolutely.
The inventory sort of thing.
Absolutely. Inventory. Right. So, yeah, down to each picnic table, playground set, swing set, how many grills. We did all that initial work back in the early 90s.
My goodness. You know, Sonny Fleming was, I interviewed Sonny on this program some years ago, mm-hmm. who was involved in that geographic information system for the state in the early days.
Right? Amazing.
Right.
Where we've come.
So you were also consulting with city and county governments at some point about parks and recreation.
Oh, yes. I like to refer to it as yes, consulting. Your title was consultant. But I learned more from the folks that were out there than I taught. You know, it was one of those things where, yes, they were so knowledgeable. And I could list dozens and dozens of people who I would regularly visit. You know, the Gerald Parrishes, the John Wilbanks, the Larry Zenders, the Austin Fessmeyers, the Kitty Frasers. There were so many people that I would go by and visit to learn because they were incredible minds in the recreation field, much more than I. A lot of times it was more they used us as validation more than gaining knowledge from us. It was really the other way around. They taught me so much. Mm-hmm. The Harvey Faust, the George Brogdons, the Dennis Suiters, the Dennis Reniers, the Lanny Goodwins. I mean, I could go on and on. These folks were just incredible. They were mentors. They were people that they're my heroes, if you will. Right. And so I learned so much from all these individuals.
You were working in state government at the beginning. Am I right? During the Sundquist administration?
Actually started before Governor Sundquist. Okay. With the Ned McWhirter.
Okay. Okay.
Administration.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then continued on through Sundquist. Mm-hmm. And at some point then you move from state government to the city of Clarksville to work there. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that transition and what you did there.
So it's very interesting, Mark. I spent almost eight years with TDEC, and then went to be assistant director in Clarksville for 3 years, and then went back to TDEC
right.
in 2003 for another 6-7 years,
right.
and then went back to the city of Clarksville. So I switched twice from. I know it's really.
I knew that there was at least one switch. I didn't know it was twice.
There was twice, and but I really enjoyed. One of those mentors, if you will, Starling Shackelford and Margaret Jones, being in Clarksville, were just gurus of that area. Incredible people. And every time I'd visit Clarksville in that area, I became closer and closer. It was just I could see so much potential in that area. So when Starling and I were talking back in 99 or 2000, about a second assistant director. Margaret was assistant director.
Right, I knew Margaret well.
And I went, so I accepted the position to go there, assistant director, and over park maintenance, athletics, the recreation area. Margaret was tremendous with our financial areas. So, and she also oversaw the park police. We had a park police department.
I didn't know that.
Not, we did.
I didn't know that.
It was really incredible. And then spent about 3 years there, learned phenomenally about parks and recreation from those two ladies. And then Joyce also, we're in conversation.
Speaking of Joyce Hoyle.
Joyce Hoyle,
yeah,
yes.
Right.
Sorry about that.
That's
Joyce
right.
Hoyle, which incredible person. Maybe we can get to her a little bit later as well. But she said, hey, I'm thinking about retiring. Want to know if you want to come back and, and then go from there. And so it did, and the rest was history. And she did retire a few months later, and then I became director of recreation services.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more about Clarksville. I know from being a friend of Starlene Shackelford, that there was some turmoil in Clarksville with the different elected officials, let's just say. I'm not going to name any names, but I can remember her talking to me privately about that over the years. Tell us about that, you obviously got along well with the folks there because they hired you as director at a later date, but was there some conflict up there?
There was. I think there was just a difference of direction, opinion.
Right.
You did have a mayor, and I'll name him because I really admire the person. I admire
right.
everyone that I worked with in
right.
in that community. Johnny Piper was the mayor,
right.
and Johnny was a go-getter. He had a tremendous vision for Clarksville. It was beautification. It was growth. It was expansion. It was updating facilities. He was that driver, and I think sometimes that creates friction, and so there was some of that friction.
Okay.
Friction there, and but I admire not only Starlene and Margaret and the whole staff, but
right.
the administration too.
Right.
Mayor Piper was I think someone I caught a vision from because of the city, and when I visited there and saw a lot of things. We had some very similar vision for the city, especially when it came to parks, upgrading facilities, and those type of things. So
I must say, I remember visiting Clarksville in the early 80s. Tom Dillard was director then, and a good fella, mm-hmm. and a thoughtful person. Consider him a friend. Mm-hmm. But man, has there been a lot of improvement in parks and recreation in Clarksville since that time.
Absolutely. Considered one of the greatest learning opportunities for me. I went back in 2009 as director. Mayor Piper did not seek a second term that early in the 2000s. He ran again and won, and I went back as director. And I felt like he was very instrumental. There was a sort of a quite humorous story. He called me and he said, "Mark," he always wanted to say, let's take a walk.
Okay.
And so he liked being outside, liked being in the parks. And so we'd go out and we'd talk and walk. That was our meetings a lot, and which was really incredible.
You can't beat that.
You can't beat that.
Yeah.
And one day we were out at McGregor Park, the river park.
Beautiful park.
Beautiful park. Yeah. And he came up and he was like, "Mark, what do you see here?" And I said, "Well, I see a really nice park, but there's improvements to be made." And he said, "Exactly." He said, "I want this park to look like Disney World."
Okay.
And I looked at him and I said, "Mayor, you give us the resources, we'll make it look like Disney World." And he turned to me and he said, "That's the greatest answer I've ever heard." I said, "I need the resources, you know."
Right.
And he did. He gave us some resources. We got it really looking nice, beautification, plant a lot of flowers and things like that. We just made it a beautiful place for people to come.
Yes, I can remember, I guess it was that particular park that we visited a couple years ago when the TRPA meeting was up there. Mm-hmm. So, yes, and has a visitor center. And
it does.
Yeah, beautiful
museum.
Boat launching area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it does.
Just really beautiful. You know, and that particular area of town is floodable.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a kind of a use for that piece of property that, you know, that's consistent with that, you know, frequent flooding, so to speak.
It is. And at least once a year when I was there, you can expect a flood.
Right.
And for to pretty much cover the park, we had the old Fairgrounds Park, if you remember, as well. And part of my time there, working with Mayor Piper, we completed a complete renovation of that park, about $30 million. We added the Wilma Rudolph Event Center. We added another really nice indoor enclosed event center on the point, the marina. Those are some things that I always remember because we were heavily involved in those. But they flooded, and they flooded this year, just
right.
a few weeks ago,
right.
completely underwater. There's
right.
drone footage
right.
of that. But you come to expect it. You came to understand that this was going to happen at least once or maybe twice a year. And your team, your maintenance team, they were well aware of what needed to be done. There was a lot of cleanup, a lot of pressure washing. But once the waters receded, people went in there. We got things done. 2010
right.
was an incredible
special
year.
Occasion,
oh, that
yeah.
was over flooded over Riverside Drive and flooded a lot of businesses and restaurants. And that was a really unique situation there. 2011 was almost the same. It was just right up to the edge of some of that roadway. So.
So you worked with Clarksville and then came back to work at the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation, mm-hmm. And took the role as director.
I did. Yes.
So tell us about that. What's involved with that job?
Well, there's a lot of things that have continued to morph, continued to change. It was a great chapter in my life. I was able to work with people like Jim Fike, Governor Bredesen,
right.
Walter Butler. There was people there that were very committed to expansion, seeing additional park land added. Our Parkland Acquisition Committee through TDEC was very active. We were always putting things in front of the State Building Commission for acquisition. Governor Bredesen gave us a lot of seed money. So we were purchasing a lot of properties from various timber companies or very other private individuals, especially along the Cumberland Trail, whether it be in Hamilton County or all the way up towards Cumberland Gap. Bowater and some of the other companies were very instrumental in Virgin Falls and Black Mountain.
Right.
There was just a lot of opportunities that we had not had in a long, long time.
Right.
And so there was a lot of properties added, thousands and tens of thousands of acres, actually.
You know, over the years, that particular directorship within the department has had the management responsibility for the federal funds that come into Tennessee from the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And then more recently has had responsible for managing the really substantial state-level funding that has been enabled in Tennessee for land acquisition and park development, historic site acquisition, and saving historic sites, historic properties, mm-hmm. from the a real estate transfer tax that was enacted. That money today is really substantial money. And Tennessee is very, it's rare in America to have that kind of dedicated funding at the state level. Mm-hmm. Tell us, I mean, and you were talking about the acquisitions that you were that were made during your tenure there. Tell us about the scope of that. How many dollars are we talking about, and each year we're being spent on capital projects and acquisition projects?
Oh, that's a really good question. Some years it just really depended on how much land and water dollars you received. So
from,
there was times
from the, federal,
the Clinton administration,
the federal,
it was zeroed out.
Right.
But then you got into the Bush or some other administrations, and those offshore oil revenues that came
right.
into the land and water were substantial.
Right.
And so that was replaced. And then the state dollars from the real estate transfer tax also contributed either, $2, $3, $4 million. Obviously, the needs across the state, when we'd receive 100 or 110 applications, double, triple, quadruple the amount that we had. And
right.
so we ended up going to a two-year cycle.
I see.
Which was really nice, because then it helped us, the previous grantees were able to get through a lot of their projects. If they were able to, to reapply, they could. But it also doubled the amount of money we could do, a substantial amount of work with the money. Today, the dollars are incredible. So
right.
we've seen a steady increase, which was phenomenal.
Right, right.
But real estate has also skyrocketed.
Well, right, and as the gross value of the sales increases, well, so does the amount of revenue taken in by the tax.
Absolutely.
So,
yes.
One of the reasons that the Parks and Recreation Technical Advisory Service was established was because of the deficit in the existence of park and recreation agencies across the state in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
So we had, many of the county seats, had a recreation agency, but then the county around it did not have an agency.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. Tell us about that problem as you saw it at the beginning and what you may have done to address that issue.
At one point, there was probably, 40 to 50% of the state that most counties, that number of counties, out of 95 counties, at least 40 of them, maybe more, did not have any real professional parks and recreation. They may have parks, and a lot of them did.
Right.
But they were operated by, a public works department, maybe, mm-hmm. just minimal maintenance. Volunteers, certainly, on the ball fields, athletic fields, those type of things, it was all under their control.
Right.
Inside and outside the fences. And so in the late 90s, mid-90s, I began to work with Ann and some others and pulled together the Tennessee Recreation Initiative Program and wrote the grant. We've got that passed and put
Tell us
place.
What that is.
Tennessee Recreation Initiative Program is essentially going into a community or county that does not have a parks and recreation system that was designed to hire a professional. It was, I believe, around $25,000 for the first 2 years, $50,000 total matched by the community. And in the third year, it was on the community to fully fund that position.
Right. As an incentive for them to create a recreation department.
That's correct. Okay. As an incentive.
Right.
There was lots of success stories and, you know, and then there were some that weren't.
Okay. Tell us a success story. Which particular locale would you point to and say this has been a success?
Ooh, you're making me go back in time a long way. Irwin was a good one.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah,
okay.
Irwin was a really good one.
Okay, so Irwin, for our listeners, is mm-hmm. Unicoi County,
That's right, up
in East Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It sure was. That was
on the North Carolina
border. A nice feather in the cap. So, and there was some in West Tennessee, but recently, for example, I visited Crockett County. I was doing some work in Crockett County.
So Alamo, Tennessee?
Alamo, Bells.
Okay.
Friendship. And they still do not have, there's not a professional person in any of those communities or
Correct.
The county.
Right.
And so there are still gaps. There's still areas. Also working with another community in southern Middle Tennessee. The county doesn't have a parks, but Pulaski does have a parks.
Right.
A really good parks department.
Right.
But
right.
the city of Ardmore, where I've been working, they do not. And they're very interested in applying for a trip grant. I think that's what we're getting ready to do.
Oh, fantastic.
So that's a really nice positive that's come out of that.
Ardmore's,
so there are areas.
Ardmore is one of those towns that's on the border. So there's an Ardmore, Alabama, and an Ardmore, Tennessee.
Yep.
And the city kind of strides the border, doesn't it?
It does. And they've got an incredible park. They have about a 38-acre park, 38.8-acre park, and the ball field complex. They just built a new splash park. They've got a tractor pull arena, which is incredible. They for a small community of 2,500 people to have basically 40 acres, and then they have some additional land too. They're considering potentially declaring as a park as
okay.
well, more
wow.
of a natural area,
okay.
which would add another 16 acres.
Wow.
So I'm sort of getting off there, but I'm just saying for somebody that has 2,500 people and to have the amount of parkland, you don't usually see that.
Correct.
So they've got some nice resources.
You know, over the years, we've seen local governments have some success with consolidation of and cooperation between political jurisdictions, let's say. You know, the example that is always pointed to is Maryville, Blount County, Alcoa, mm-hmm. joining together to form one park and recreation agency. And when you talk about communities like Bells and Alamo and Friendship, none of those towns have enough tax base, frankly, to support a park and recreation agency. I'm
Correct.
Just saying that.
Yeah.
But together they might.
You're absolutely correct.
Right, yeah, mm-hmm. but together they might if they would have the gumption to get together and create a regional park and recreation agency.
Correct.
What do you think the future of that is in Tennessee?
I think it's stronger than maybe it's ever been.
Okay.
Based on tax base, we target some of the Upper Cumberland area as well of Middle Tennessee. There's some things in southern Middle Tennessee. A lot of counties in West Tennessee can certainly be assisted by some of those areas. But it's bringing people to the table. It's
right.
developing those partnerships. And a lot of times they don't want to do that.
Right.
You know, even my experience in Texas is this is my turf. This is my city. You know, I don't really want to be involved with a partnership with somebody else.
Right.
So it takes special people. It takes elected officials. It takes those city leaders or citizen leadership to really make those things happen. But I think it's critical if you're looking at doing something along those lines.
Well, you know, and there may be enough money out there on the table for these communities to say, okay, if we really want to have that swimming pool that we've always wanted to have, maybe we can get together to accomplish some of those things, or the community center that we've always wanted to
exactly.
do. Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I can remember visiting McNary County, Tennessee, in one of my travels. Mm-hmm. And I think there were 12 or 13 municipalities in McNary County, little towns like Finger, you know, and just Selmer, and none of them had the
Adamsville.
Adamsville, Pocahontas.
Yes, you know, Pocahontas.
but none of them had the capacity on their own to form a park and recreation agency. Selmer, I think, did, but at that time only had a part-time agency. We proposed them a unified system, but they didn't bite at the time. So we'll see. I wanted to go back again and talk about yourself personally, and I know that you have been a president of the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association.
That's correct.
So that's a big time commitment. Now, when you were president, were you working for state government or were you working for the city of Clarksville? Or do you remember?
Ooh, I'd have to go back and remember. I think it was Clarksville.
Okay.
I think it was in the early 2000s.
Okay.
So I think it was the city of
Well, tell us about that. I mean, tell us about TRPA and why that's an important organization and how was it important to you in your life?
Oh, it absolutely was important. Even starting in the early 90s and being involved with TRPA, Kitty Frazier had asked me to serve on the municipal county board in creating and in doing that conference, the municipal county section conference, and it was at Fairfield Glade.
Okay.
It was probably 94 in that neighborhood. I don't think it was 93, but it might have been 94. And I assisted in planning. So that was my introduction to TRPA in a lot of ways. And then it grew. My love for it grew. And, of course, then you had Anne that went to be executive director, and then Candy Rollins came in.
Right.
And so incredible leadership over the last 30 years. I think it's provided an opportunity for education, for training, the conferences, the ability to go in and speak, because they're always looking for people to come in and share what's going on in their community or unique ideas, those type of things. It's not just people coming in from Georgia or Virginia or, you know, Texas or somewhere like that, although those can happen. But it's really taking advantage of some of the local in-state knowledge that's out there and what are people doing. And so it's an incredible opportunity. So it afforded me the opportunity to be municipal county chair at one point, and it afforded me the opportunity to become, you know, president-elect and then president and working with Candy during that time, and then even going on beyond. But the networking was phenomenal. That's, to me, was as valuable as maybe anything. Meeting the Harvey Faust, the Jim Fikes, the Larry Zenders. I've mentioned some of those folks before. And sitting there and being able to ask some questions and just to see where they're at and what they're doing, what the trends were in their communities. Phenomenal.
You know, in working at the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation as Director of Recreation and Educational Services, you were involved with really the growth of that program. I can remember that the Technical Advisory Service was just a one-man band when I was involved with it. Mm-hmm. And now there's at least one advisor for each grand division of the state. Were you involved in the the improvements to bring on those new positions and that sort of thing? And if so, tell us about that.
I think so. Of course, I have to go back to Ann Marshall and Joyce Hoyle. They set the stage for a lot of that to occur.
Right.
And I've always have loved Ann's vision of where, and today I think you're realizing a lot of that vision that we would talk about back in the early 90s with a Blue Way coordinator, trails coordinator, specialty positions within that section of TDEC that could really provide hands-on technical assistance to communities, not just the grants. At times we seem to be more grant-focused
right.
than technical assistance. And that was a struggle for me personally
right.
because while I loved grants, I understood what they were doing. We got away from doing strategic planning or helping communities with assessments or helping people helping communities employ solid people in their communities. We did some of that, and then we'd get away, and then we'd try to refocus and bring
right.
that back in.
Right.
And so today, I think it's a lot different. It's more the vision that we had, you know, 30 years ago of what it should be. And so it's really exciting. But there has been incremental growth. We did see part-task consultants throughout the state.
Right.
We did see grant people throughout the state helping. It wasn't just a one-man show in those areas.
So. Right, right. So you, in your travels, left Tennessee to go to Texas. Tell us what was involved with that and tell us about your experience in Texas.
I did. In 2016, my wife, who has been incredibly instrumental in not only her career, she spent several years with
in Parks and Recreation as well,
State Parks. But our youngest son graduated high school, went on to college, and we all would just sort of threw it out in the back of our minds if there was ever an opportunity to go somewhere else, to learn, to grow, but also to be somewhere warmer.
Okay. All right.
We thought maybe Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, but Texas came up, and it gave us a great opportunity to move just on the north side of Austin.
Okay.
Leander, Texas was a phenomenal community. We arrived in 2016. It was about 40,000 people. When I left last year, we were at about 95,000.
Oh, my gosh.
It was listed the 8 years that we were there. It was listed three times as the fastest growing community in the United States.
Wow!
Building about any one time, there's about 1,800 building permits that were issued on average at any one time throughout that 8 years. A lot of growth, a lot of people moving in. Obviously, from California was a lot. But there were all over the United States, Chicago, Montana, North Dakota, Tennessee, Georgia. There was a lot of people that we met that were moving from all parts of the country. The bulk came from California, to be honest. So,
And they had to do park facilities and park programs to
absolutely.
Go with that. Tell us about that.
So I went, and the first day on the job, I was meeting with staff. And honestly, I had a recreation programmer, and a maintenance supervisor, and an administrative assistant, and myself, and about five maintenance staff. That was it. And so quite the challenge. And then, of course, the administrative assistant said, oh, by the way, I'm retiring
okay.
in 30 days.
Oh, boy.
And my recreation programmer says, I'm finishing up my master's degree in finance and business administration in December, and I'll be looking for another job. And I'm like, okay, well... That's interesting. So I knew there was going to be some turnover, but I also knew the challenges. The citizens earlier in 2016 had voted for a little over $50 million bond program for Parks and Recreation.
Oh, boy.
So it included a brand new regional park, a soccer complex, some smaller projects as well, but then also $18 million for a community recreation center.
I was going to ask, right.
Another $12 million for... an athletic complex, which we already had baseball complex. We just didn't have softball, girls softball. So our primary focus was girls softball. So we were able to, and also about $6 million for a senior activity center. So those are some of the projects that we became, and we did really, really well in those 8 years. We expanded. We went from less than 10 staff, including our maintenance staff, to almost 70 in those 8 years. Council was very favorable to us on those areas. So it was a very enjoyable experience. We got a lot of projects accomplished, but there were some that we didn't. We were, when I left, we had the master plan completed for the athletic complex, and we had about 80 acres. So that was done. But now it's, you know, when you start talking about, Mark, and you probably know very well, $12 million that was voted on by citizens in 2016 became $30 million or $35 million to complete a complex,
right?
You know, in 2022, 2023, right. 2024. Right. Costs have gone up so tremendously. And so there were some challenges there and how that was going to work. Same with the recreation center. I went to council probably a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and we were now then beginning to focus on the recreation center. And we had $18 million, and I shared with them. I said, here's a study of the Southwest and either community centers, recreation centers under construction right now or just opened. And it was 38. 40, 42, 45, $50 million facilities.
Including aquatics and all that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. Some of them didn't include aquatics.
Okay.
Some did.
Yeah.
And ours was not to include aquatics.
Yeah. For the audience, the swimming pools become a special dollar situation.
They get to be
expensive.
And that's really tough for a lot of our small communities, right, to even think about building a $3, $4, $5 million aquatic.
You know, it occurs to me that your experience in dealing with the grant cycle, and with all these communities, and behind the scenes with the architects and engineers, the landscape designers that are involved with promoting those projects and in designing and building those projects, all those years at conservation and parks, when you go into the local government, now you've had that experience of dealing with all those people in the pre-planning process, you know, the specifications process, taking it out to bid, all those kinds of technicalities you were very experienced about.
Absolutely, and it gave that basis for building the Wilma Rudolph Event Center in Clarksville, building the Fort Defiance Museum in Clarksville, upgrading soccer complex in Clarksville, and then planning for a 400-acre athletic complex in Clarksville,
right,
plus all the facilities in Leander, Texas, as well. Because I can go back and look at, especially the small communities, you know, the Nashvilles, the Chattanoogas, the Knoxvilles, the Memphis, they had people that were able to help them, the Barge,
right,
Wagners, the Gresham Smiths,
right,
the Kimley Horns. Those people were already invested in those communities. But
right,
when you went into small communities, and we did this a tremendous lot, you probably remember, mm-hmm, in going into small communities, they really didn't know what they were getting when they were talking with architect and engineers. And many times we meet out there on site, so we would be able to somewhat talk the language and make sure that these communities were getting their value for what they were spending with the grants and their local match.
So important.
It was.
Absolutely.
Very important.
Absolutely. Well, Mark, we've talked about your development and the timeline of your career, and we're about 40 minutes into our interview.
Wow.
So I wanted to spend some time talking about the kind of so what. We talk about the values of parks and recreation. Give us your observations about what a viable park and recreation agency means to a community. You know, for a community that has been without that sort of capacity, without that sort of element in its community, how does a community change when that element comes into the community and it's properly done?
Wow, to me, parks and recreation is the life of a community. It is the life of a city, a town, a county. You can bring in industry, which helps on the economic end of things. But when you're talking about citizens, parks is where it is and where it's at, excuse me.
Right.
I mean, even for my own life and growing up in southern Indiana for just a short period of time, but primarily in Hendersonville, Tennessee.
Okay.
And being involved with the athletics, the sports, but also being involved with my church. You know, they had a family life center.
Mm-hmm.
It exposed me to a lot of opportunities that many people don't have. You know, when you have quality parks, you have quality facilities, and you're able to use those quality trails, greenways, connections. And I think a lot of citizens miss out. And that's the focus now, of even now in my career, is going in and helping these folks see this vision of what the quality of life. And I know that's a term that can be used in a lot of, I look at it as life value. What are the life values here and how can they be improved? With simple things. It doesn't have to take multi-million dollars. It doesn't have to take multi-million dollar bond projects.
Right.
Could, but it doesn't have to.
You know, Mark, I think it's been my experience. Hope you give you your thoughts on this. There are many communities that think that if they build this brick and mortar thing, whether it's a tennis court or a swimming pool or a ball field, that's going to make parks and recreation happen in their community. Now, I know that that's a fallacy. Tell us about that.
It is a fallacy. Just because you build it doesn't mean they will always come.
Right.
They won't.
What does it take to get them to come?
It takes initiative by city leaders, county leaders, citizens in the county to make those things happen.
Right.
But it's really even beyond that. It's diving into that community's needs.
Right.
In my opinion, what are the true needs? Just because you build an additional ball field or two or three doesn't mean that everybody's going to come. We have a lot of things that are trendy at this point, and here to stay in some ways. But doesn't mean they'll always utilize that.
Well, the programming aspect is so important.
Absolutely.
You know, so if it's tennis, they're, you know, having a tennis clinic. If it's swimming, teaching the kids to swim.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that element of programming that a professional park and recreation person's going to bring to the table.
And that's the most critical aspect, Mark.
Right.
You know, is somebody who has that knowledge, that ability to go in and to share what that vision is for that community. You know, I've been in a lot of communities even since I've been back, and there's so many communities that I'm working with or our company has been working with, and I share with the city leaders, I could picture myself living here. You know, I won't move, but it's one of those things that I become so passionately involved with. But I want them to catch that and have a professional person on board, whether that's a parks and recreation program manager, a recreation director simply doing recreation events, or is it a full parks and recreation? How does that look for your community? Let's start somewhere. Let's not leave it and keep pushing it off in the back table. Let's start somewhere. Let's get someone in here who can help direct and improve your facilities that you have now and envision for the future.
Right. So I want to get back and ask you about your current involvement and your current your company that you've begun. I've done just a little bit of a search on the internet about it, and I want to learn more.
Okay.
But before we get off of that and get off into that topic, I wanted to ask you about the cultural facilities in Clarksville. You mentioned Fort Defiance. I want you to tell us about that. I mean, this is a Civil War era fort. Am I correct?
That's correct.
And I thought that was federal property.
No, it's actually city property.
Okay, tell us about that.
Yeah, that was when I went in the early 2000s. It was really an overgrown set of breastworks, where, built by Confederates, but very, very shortly after it was occupied by the federal.
Right.
And the breastworks are what we've understood, and even at that time and still today, are some of the best preserved in the United States as a fort. There was never a shot fired. The white flag was raised as Grant came around and came around the bend with the steamships, and essentially the Confederate soldiers left, and then it was occupied by federal troops pretty much for the remainder of the war. There was a couple times it switched, but right. very briefly. We ended up building a
How did this become property is it Montgomery County or is it City of Clarksville?
It is City of Clarksville.
Okay.
It is.
How did it come into their possession? Or do you know?
I would have to really go back and think how that came into city possession. It's been there for quite a while.
It's along the river.
It's along the river. Yeah, it's over about 180-foot bluff on top of the bluff, just past the city and going up New Providence Hill. But it's also next to Sevier Station, where John Valentine Sevier had built a cabin back in the 1700s.
First governor of Tennessee.
Exactly. Right. And so, there was I'm not going to go into the details, but there was obviously a lot of issues there between pioneers and settlers and Native Americans. And so there was a lot of interaction, not always good.
Right.
And so, but there is still a spot there where the Sevier Station is. There's a building there.
Frontier
Station.
Not
far from Fort Defiance. And so, and then we ended up building a really beautiful multi-million dollar museum.
And visitor center.
Visitor center museum there. It's been occupied. I hired William Parker to be there. But I have to give credit. There was also some Austin Peay College professors who were incredibly passionate about Fort Defiance. And they wanted it protected. They wanted it to look like it is today.
Right.
Really nice. So they really invested so much time and energy into that project.
Well, they do some terrific programming up there.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, kind of living history sort of sorts of things.
Absolutely.
Talk more about that.
So not only can you tour the museum and learn about what took place, not only just there, but throughout Clarksville during the mid-1800s and even beyond, but there was some things that we did even earlier than that, the Native Americans and the settlers in that area and how they interacted with one another. But we staged quite a few different festivals, events.
Mm-hmm.
Some were very well received. We had a one of the events we had at one point is sort of humorous. We had these group of actors that came in, or portrayers, and there was a chief doublehead, and it was recorded history and attacked some of the settlers that were there. And there was a moment in time where they beheaded some settlers.
Oh, boy.
Well, they actually did it.
They
pulled out this fake head. And I was standing there, and I'm like, oh, no. And sure enough, there was three or four children that sort of screamed.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, we went too far. We went way too far with this. So William and I said, okay, we've got to back off of this us a little bit. But we had Christmas programs in the 1800s, which was really special. So there's a lot of different things that took place there from Revolutionary era times all the way through the Civil War and even up through early part of the 19th century, 20th century.
Right. Well, that whole area up there is close to my heart, and my wife's family has got heritage in that area, so we get up to Port Royal and to Dunbar Cave quite a bit. So those beautiful areas.
My wife was born and raised there, in Clarksville. So
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So it's got a connection there as well. So
right.
Love Dunbar Cave, Port Royal. Developed the Blue Way plan also. And so now there's basically about 40 miles of Blue Way
along from the, Port Royal down the Red River,
down the Red River up the West Fork. Right. You know, we were able to work with groups. We opened that up. We had Boy Scout that came in and did an Eagle Project and putting in mile markers, developed the plan for the entire Blue Way, and opened that up. And then we had the old park that was on the north side of Boy Scout Park, and then we added another Blue Way access way up on the north side. That property was given donated to the city. And so we put in these really incredible steps and access. So now you can float this entire area.
It's fantastic. Phenomenal. Well, the area has got all kinds of historical connections with the Trail of Tears and all of those things. So, So Mark, tell us about your current business venture that you got going on. I know with George and Gerald. Tell us about that.
well, of course, George and Gerald have been my heroes and mentors for decades.
Brogdon, Gerald Parrish.
That's correct. Right. Both of those guys are phenomenal.
Both have been guests on this program, by the way.
They have. Right. So a year and a half, 2 years ago, we began to kick around the idea. We're all looking at retirement from our current positions. And we kicked around the, you know, what would this look like if we did consulting work, master planning work, grant work? We're not engineers, we're not architects, but we feel like there's a need and a gap that we can fill and plug for a lot of small, rural, medium-sized communities that do not have all the resources in the world. We can go in and help and assist these communities, especially distressed communities, or at-risk type communities and counties. And we felt like there was an opportunity for us to really be able to assist them in completing master plans. As you know, Tennessee, Texas, and a couple other states, it's mandatory that you have a master plan in place, at least a five-year master plan in place.
Before they'll give you any grant money.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly. So if you don't, and we know of one community we're going to be working with later this fall who did submit a grant earlier this year, and they did not have a current 10-year master plan. It was beyond that. And they end up not being able to technically apply, and they withdrew their grant application. So what we want to do is make sure that every community that desires to improve the park system has that opportunity, and we can go in there. So on average, I heard from another person in a large firm tell me just earlier this week that the average grant, the average master plan costs about $125,000.
Wow.
Well, your Bells, Tennessee, or your Alamos, or your Ardmore's that we were just
talking about.
That's
bigger than their entire city budget.
They can't afford that. Right. So can we do that at a reduced cost? And we can. We can do that. And then we can work with those larger firms and get them in a position to have that architect and engineering for those projects that they want to invest in. So that's what we're doing.
So your group is working just in Tennessee, or are you working in other states as well?
Right now, we're just working in Tennessee. Okay. We can work in other states.
Okay.
And the possibility exists that we will be doing that in maybe in the next year or so with some of the things that we're working with some other companies on. But right now, it's just strictly Tennessee.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, Mark, are you involved in anything that you want to mention outside of your work and your profession? Do you have any hobbies that you want to tell us about? Or?
Oh, wow. Well, since we moved back to Tennessee, our hobby's been really doing things around the house.
Getting settled in,
you know, doing things at the house. And those things that have to be, you know, have to be done. But, yes, I love to turkey hunt. I like to fly fish. And I want to start doing it even more. My dad was huge into fly fishing, traveled the country and fly fishing. My wife loves to kayak. And so I'm not a big kayak fisher person like she is. She can sit in a kayak almost all day and fish. I got to be moving. I just can't sit there and keep casting and casting. She can. So we're trying to find some places like the Duck River, which is really close to us, the Buffalo River, which is very close. Tennessee River is just a stone's throw from our house. I don't think I'll get on the Tennessee River, but the others I'll do. As long as I can paddle and keep making progress. I like to kayak. So those are some of the things we're interested in. We love attending festivals and events. One of the things that we picked up in Texas is we probably visited 100 communities in Central Texas, maybe more. But we tried to hit a lot of the festival events that they were having, especially their major events. You know, every community seems to have the Strawberry Festival happening in Humboldt this week. You know, the Iris Festival and Picnic in Erin, those type of things. We enjoy going and being out in those environments. So
fantastic.
We've done some of those while we've been back. We're going to do more.
Before we close, give us the name of your current business so that people, if they're interested, can get a hold of you. And how can they get a hold of you?
Great. GGM LLC, Recreation and Park Advisory Group, is the name of our company.
Okay.
And they can certainly call me.
Just Google that.
They can Google it, or they can, you know, call us 931-320-7394.
All right.
So, yes.
Well, Mark, it's been delightful to have you as a guest. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.